Following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on October 24, 1994 at Murari Sevak Farm in Mulberry, Tennessee. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 27, Verse 11.
Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything naturally manifested. He is present there only as a reflection. But if your devotee can realize that in the darkness of the material illusion, the only light is the Supreme Lord, who is its support. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that the background of the material manifestation is Lord Krishna. And as confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Krishna is the cause of all causes. In the Brahma Samhita, it is stated that the Supreme Lord, by His partial or plenary expansion, is present not only within this universe, and each and every universe, but in every atom, although He is one without a second. The word advayam, without a second, which is used in this verse, indicates that although the Supreme Personality of Godhead is represented in everything, including the atoms, He is not divided. His presence and everything is explained in the next verse. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation, purport to text 11, chapter 27, canto 3 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the matter of understanding material nature. Om Tat Sat. So, Super Soul is all pervasive, and He's entering into everything. At the same time, we should see that the Supreme Lord is present in everything also through His energy. All the energies that we see are actually the proof of God. Just like in this room on Malini, the sunlight is shining. And on the table there's also sunlight coming, a little bit coming on Yagarupini. And also on Tulasi Devi and on Banana Fiji. So, how do we know about the sun? The sun is situated billions of miles away. But we know about the sun from the energy of the sun. It was cold in the morning, now it's become warmer because of the sun. The sun is giving off so much heat. And obviously it was dark at night, and now it's light. So the sun is giving off light. So heat and light are coming from? Who can say? This heat and light that we're seeing here, where is it coming from? The sun. Is that right, Archie? In India there was some villagers disturbed, middle of the night, somebody is going around with a flashlight, with a little lantern, and they're creating, walking around, dogs are barking. They said, what are you doing in the middle of the night walking around in our backyards and everywhere? The man said, I'm looking for the sun. Playing with his lantern and looking for the sun. Good idea. What do you need? You don't need to look for the sun with a lantern. When the sun comes, it's going to light up the whole world. You know? It's like people are saying, where is God? Where is God? So the Bhagavatam is saying, all the energy we're seeing, this whole material energy, all the various energies that are in this world, these are emanations from Krishna. They're transformation of His energy. Therefore, just like the sunlight and heat is a proof of the sun, for the self-realized soul, everything they see, whether it's this earth or liquid or fire, they see all this is energy coming from Krishna. Without the origin, there would be no energy. It's a very interesting point. How that the energy, and then just like the energy is itself a proof of the existence of the Lord. So the devotee can feel in connection with the Lord every time with seeing everything. It's all this energy of the Lord. Of course, the Lord personally, through His Paramatma form, He's also present within every atom, within every living entity, within Dhruva's heart, Devan's heart, Narayan's heart, within everybody's heart. See the sloops? Paramatma is there. This is, but how do we see that? That requires a spiritual vision. We can see, just like we see the sun through the reflection. It's like I can't see the sun, but I can see the sun reflecting off of the wall and off. So through the reflection, I know the sun is there. So like that, we can also see the presence of the super soul through the reflections in the material nature. Just like after Einstein studied the universe and everything, came up with his E=mc², this equation and everything. But then he said that, that this whole universe is so orderly. Everything is so minutely organized that It's inconceivable that there's not some intelligence behind it. Everyone knows how much effort it takes to keep the house clean, to keep it ordered. If you don't do anything, it will all merge into a mess. So one has to continually be organizing, straightening out. You see, the whole universe, everything's working in a pretty organized manner. So it's obvious that there's intelligence behind that. Only a fool can fail to see that. The atheist tried to think that everything has happened by accident, by natural selection. But in life, there's no example of anything happening by accident. So much complex development. There's no such example. Prabhupada gives several examples. Like he says, you look at an artificial flower. It may be very nice, but you compare that to the real flower, then you see the real flower has got so much more depth, aroma, texture. You cannot compare. Maybe from a distance it looks the same. But when you get up real close and look, there's a big difference. Yet, if you were to tell someone that this plastic flower was not made by anyone, it just happened accidentally, right? Then people will say, you're crazy, don't fool around with me, don't kid with me. So no, this just happened accidentally. The molecules somehow came together and it just appeared like that. Just say, you know, take a hike, you know, what's going on? Nobody will believe, but then you show a real flower and say, this happened accidentally. Ah, oh, of course. So actually, when we see so many nice arrangements, the devotee sees the hand of Krishna behind everything. People appreciate the natural beauty, now new age and ecologists, and many people are trying to appreciate the natural beauty. But Srila Prabhupada stressed what's more important is to appreciate the intelligence that created this natural beauty. If we are very attached to the natural beauty, without any knowledge about the intelligence behind it, that will simply bring us again back into the material world, into conditional life. But if we can appreciate, it's like the artist who's created this natural beauty. It's like you go in a museum and you see the beautiful paintings, but always you appreciate the artist who created the painting. His genius, his artistic ability, his ingenuity. This is a wonderful thing. Again, here we have the whole material creation has so many beautiful things, whether the peacocks or the butterflies or the... Now people are driving to see how the leaves are changing color. Some people are driving for long distances to see the shades of yellow and red, green, and so on. So, but who is the person who has created this whole scenario that they may not appreciate? If you just add Krishna, this energy is the reflection and the presence of Krishna in an indirect way, then people can gradually develop some love for Krishna, some appreciation. And we think, oh, what a wonderful accident. How is it that in our house, you know, you can drop the things a million times, but you know, never just makes a mess on the floor, never just like suddenly takes some kind of tangible form. So the Buddha calculated mathematically just to create one step in the creation or something like that, how many times, what's the odds? It's like one to, what is it, one to millions and millions and millions of zeros, you know. It's like total impractical. What to speak of all the sequences that would be required. So, in this verse, it says that the Lord is transcendental, but He's manifest as a reflection. This material energy is also a reflection of the Lord. And He's present in all the energies, even in the false ego. Normally, either one supports something or someone is in something. Krishna is, like the whole earth is supporting everything, but the earth is not really a participant of what's going on the top of it. It is supporting everything. She's beyond the activities of the kings and presidents and all the different people that are living on her. She's just supporting everything. So here you get the situation where Krishna, because he's expanded himself in all these different energies, that he's supporting everything. At the same time, simultaneously, he can enter into everything. And if he wants, he can also descend and participate as if he were also a player. This is very inconceivable, how the Lord can support everything, enter into everything, at the same time be part, at the same time not be part. As though every conceivable and inconceivable option he can do, he cannot be limited. Therefore he is absolute. And one without a second, Advayam. So the material nature, just like this body has no consciousness of its own. The consciousness is the presence of the Atma, the Self. Similarly, without consciousness, our body has got no vision. What eyesight does the dead body have? 20-20, 40-40?
Zero.
No eyesight. No vision. Dead body means brain dead, body dead, vision dead. So here, we have got the situation, we have the whole material nature. The material nature, by definition, has got no consciousness. Then, where is the vision? Where are the eyes of the material nature? There is no consciousness. Then how is the material nature cognition? It's an inert matter, we say. But here explains that the Lord, He is the eyes of the material nature, asat chakshu. So that can be taken in two ways. One is because He is in the material nature, so He is giving the material nature light directly and through the living entities, which are also His expansion and energy. The other aspect is that how we can see an inert energy. How is it the living soul who is on a higher level is able to see matter on a lower level? And so that ability to perceive matter is also given by Krishna. So to perceive, to see, to experience matter is another faculty of Krishna's presence. This is a very technical section of the Bhagavatam, understanding material nature. It's important because being in this material nature, it's very easy for us to think of the material nature as a reality and forget about Krishna. The material nature is very intoxicating. It's easy to overwhelm us. But if we can remember always the presence of Krishna everywhere, then in this way we can remain Krishna conscious, and by the mercy of Krishna, He promises us we can cross over the material nature. Mahamukhetas tukunteya. Another one is Devihesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratya Mama Eva Jeva Padyante Mayam Itanta Antite. Whoever surrenders to me, I cross them over this ocean of material nature. Now, another point that Prabhupada brings up here is Krishna is not divided. Although He is expanded everywhere, it's not that He is divided. Although the sunlight is coming here, the sunlight is present in our house, in every house in Tennessee, in the whole world, there's so many houses have got the sunlight coming in. But that doesn't mean that because sun has come in many houses, sun has become divided up. Sun remains one, but through the energy becomes present in many houses. So here the soul of Krishna is present in His Paramatma feature everywhere, but He's not divided up. If you divide something, you got one cookie, I cut it in half, how many cookie pieces I have? What do you think? Two. Good. So you divide, you get two. Then I have two pieces, I cut each one in half, how many I get? Four. So you go on, we keep dividing, but each piece starts getting smaller, isn't it? Pretty soon, it's not so attractive. Now, Krishna, although He's expanded into all the different energies, that He's present in all the atoms and all the people and everything, and the planets, it's not that He's divided, and that each time He's expanding, that like He's getting smaller and smaller and less and less. He's not reducing in size, not reducing in His capacity, not dividing. Expanding, Prabhupada in the Brahma Samhita explains, you take one candle, you light another candle. The first candle is not less, it just ignited another candle. Like this, Krishna can go on expanding, and His original form is not at all diminished. It is like the sun can be present in everyone's house, but the sun still keeps the same full energy, no matter how many houses and how many places the sunlight is falling. These are all very inconceivable truths. And these examples are quite crude. They're really just basic, just to give us some kind of rudimentary understanding. But the principle is like that. Krishna is not divided, He's always one. No matter how many times He expands, no matter how many places He enters into, Krishna still remains fully potent with all the potency, and He doesn't reduce. Not only in this universe, but in all the universes. Not only in all the universes, but in every atom. How many atoms are there? We can't even, in a pin there's so many millions of atoms, what to speak of the entire universe. How many times Krishna, what to speak of unlimited universes? Krishna through His Paramatma feature, he's present in each and every atom. But his potential is not diminished in least. He's not divided up. He always has the full. This is coming back. Mayavadis, they consider that there's a transformation of energy. That the material energy is illusion. And only the spirit is truth. And that we are all part of that Supreme Spirit, therefore actually we're all God. We just take away the illusion, we realize we are God. This is their concept. So, this verse denies that. Lord is not divided. Lord is present everywhere. At the same time, the Lord is remaining aloof and absolute. When Lord Chaitanya was a little tot, he started to eat, his mother gave a plate of sandesh and he started to eat the dirt. The mother said, "What are you doing? Why don't you eat the sandesh?" Lord Chaitanya said, "It's all dirt, what's the problem? This is dirt and sandesh is also dirt. It's dirt was there and from that the grass grew and the cow ate the grass, produced some milk and this produced sandesh. So it's all nothing but transformation of dirt." So this dirt or that dirt, what's the difference? I want to eat this black dirt, I don't want to eat this sandesh dirt. So then Mother Sachi was hard-pressed, "What'd you say?" All of us didn't expect a little tot to start giving the Mayavadi philosophy. So, at the opportune moments, Lord Chaitanya would just reveal some opulence, take everyone by surprise. So she had brought some clay cup, put water in the clay cup, said, "This is also dirt, but this has been fired. This clay has been cooked, therefore the fire, therefore it's become hard. But you put water here," she put a little pile of dirt, "put water, it became mud. So this form of earth is not suitable for holding the water. But this form will hold it. You understand?" And he said, "Yeah." So similarly, if you eat the sandesh, it's good for you to get healthy. If you eat the crude dirt, you get sick. It's not good for eating. Not recommended food. So then Lord Chaitanya said, "Why didn't you tell me before? If you don't tell me these things, how will I know?" "So I'm hungry, give me your milk." And he started acting like a baby again. And Mother Sachi became overwhelmed with affection. Like this, a few days ago we were reading how in 10th canto of Bhagavatam, all the cowherd boys went to Mother Yasoda and complained that Krishna is eating dirt. Right? Same thing, but a different, he was a little bigger. The Mother Sachi called, Mother Yasoda called Krishna and said, "What is, you're eating dirt? Haribo. Your brother Balaram said, all the other boys are saying, so you're eating dirt, it's not good." His mother Soda is very concerned with Krishna's health. He's dirt, he could get sick. He's saying, "No mother, they're all lying. I'm not eating any dirt. But your brother, he also said, why would you be lying? He took their side. They're all lying and he took their side all against me. They're all against me. But I'm not eating any dirt. If you don't believe, you look in my mouth and you see." The mother is, "Okay, open your mouth, let me see." Right. So all along Krishna is just playing like a cowherd boy, just playing like a little child. Then all of a sudden he opens his mouth, but when Mother Yasoda looks in the mouth, instead of seeing, you know, teeth and tongue and all the other things you're going to see in a mouth of a child, whether there's any dirt or not in there. Instead, she starts seeing all of the universes, starts seeing the Vishwarupa. Like you turn on, all of a sudden she sees the entire spiritual world, material world, the Mahavishnu, the Pradhana, the Mahatattva, the 24 elements. That she starts seeing all like realities are starting to become realized by her, seeing unlimited universes and seeing within all the material creation there's this universe and then this planet, and then this planet there's Vrindavan, and there she's looking in Krishna's mouth. And it's overwhelming. She's wondering, am I dreaming? Is it that I'm just hallucinating? I've been in the sun too long? Or is this something that is to do with my son, that because I'm looking in his mouth? She didn't know what to make of what she was seeing. Okay, close your mouth. The mother, what do you see? See? So, although Krishna, he can enter also into this creation as one of the, apparently one of the participants. See, that's very bewildering. People can't understand. And you look in the dictionary, they can't figure out who Krishna is. Especially in the West, look in the encyclopedia, they all give some crazy definition. The eighth avatar, just so many speculations. See, nobody understands Krishna's actual position. Who Krishna is? Krishna is God, there's only one God. Whether you call him Allah, Jehovah, or Krishna, there's only one God. But that one God came to this earth and he is known as Krishna. And he showed some of his unlimited opulences, how he can simultaneously be the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Power, full, the Absolute. And at the same time, he can have very many loving exchanges with his devotees. Sometimes the two overlap, like in this case, suddenly Devadatta Yasoda saw that her son was having these divine aspects, but then Krishna made her simply become overwhelmed with motherly affection, and she started to kiss Krishna's face and hug him. She had so much natural love for Krishna. The Mayavadis, they're saying everything is one. The one time there was one was making a feast for one Mayavadi, and then he came out and he gave special cow dung sweet rice. And the Mayavadi said, "What is that?" "It's sweet rice. Why is it brown and what is that?" He said, "This is a cow dung." "Cow dung? But I never had such sweet rice before with cow dung. Usually they are using milk." He said, "Whether milk or cow dung, it's all coming from cow. So what's the difference? It's all one, isn't it?" "It's all one. So why you are differentiating? It's all one. So I make, instead of making with milk, I made with cow dung. I had one of cow dung there. But I would prefer with the milk." So this is the problem. The Mayavadis, they may say, cow dung or milk, but in reality the different reflections of the energy are having different qualities, different types of energy. So it's not that everything is one, there's so much variegatedness, there's differences. There's a difference between the material energy and there's a difference between the spiritual energy. Krishna is one with his energies, at the same time he's different. Just like the sun is one and different with energies. Krishna is producing all the energies, but that doesn't mean that he's simply the sum total of all energy. You can put all the sunlight together and all the heat together, but still the sun has got something more than that. There's sunbursts and there's sunspots and there's heat and there's a form, and even inside the sun there's supposed to be so many higher living entities in another dimension of Surya Loka. So it's not that just the seed heat and the sunlight can equal the sun. They're products, energies of the sun. Some of these different energies are one with Krishna. They're coming from Krishna, they're not different, they're not disconnected, but at the same time, Krishna has got something on them also, something more than they have. He's also independent. He's supporting everything. And this is Krishna's greatness. He can support, at the same time he can enter. Sun is supporting the sunlight and heat, but the sun cannot enter into our house directly. But that's the difference. Krishna can support and he can also enter. When he enters in, he's very expert. Just like sometimes in the olden times, the kings, they would go incognito amongst the people. This example there. See, how does a king know something? Like the dog knows things by direct smelling. Someone was saying that vegetarians have different smells than non-vegetarians. So the deer, they can know that people here smell different. So the deer may like to be around here more than where the people are going to shoot them. So certain animals, by smelling, they can know things. Then, some people, they know by smelling, some they know by seeing. But how does the government know? There's so many articles now about the CIA coming up in America. Because some big CIA spy got caught taking millions of dollars from Russia and telling all the secrets. So governments, they rely on their intelligence. Their spies and their agents, and they gather so much information. And then on the basis of that, because you know, it's not like President of the United States is going to read the newspaper alone. Of course, nowadays they do that too. But they want to know from their own sources what's really going on somewhere. The president couldn't go to Haiti and check it out himself. He had to send, you know, he had to have this agents and spies and informers or whatever. So the kings, they know things by kings and government. They have to know by their intelligence. But sometimes the king would also, just to check out whether he's getting the right information, he dressed himself in the ordinary dress and kind of just go and walk around the street, sit in some public place in disguise, and then overhear what people are talking. And that way you could kind of see what is the real mood in that place. Direct. I don't know if they can. I don't think the President of the United States could do that. I don't know if he could fool anybody. But anyway, there are plenty of people now, there's plenty of people telling him. Even Krishna, he would do that also. When he was playing the role of a king, he would disguise himself and go in the crowd and check everything out. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam that he would do that also. But Krishna is the King of Kings, as the Lord of Lords. He also comes down in the material world and he plays a part. For the common people, they didn't think Krishna was God. They might have thought he was a very wonderful person, very great. Some people could know he was actually God. he didn't want to disturb the faith of the foolish people. So even when he left, he was shot in the foot by hunters. Some people think, oh, Krishna was shot. But the Bhagavatam explains that he rose into the sky and he was received by all of his heavenly hosts, and he just went back to the spiritual world. It wasn't that he died or anything. It was just, but for the ignorant people, they think, oh, so Krishna was shot. Yesterday we read in one book, until the bookstore opened up, and they said, well, the heir of the Hare Krishna movement, they're worshipping Krishna, and that he was shot in the foot and died, but Jesus, he was resurrected. So therefore, Jesus is greater and Krishna is nobody. It's a very unbiased book. So they don't know what Krishna's actual position is. In fact, some, because apparently Krishna and Ram and Ramayana, they say that that hunter was actually Bali, who came back, and he had, since Krishna had killed Bali, so then Bali had the chance to come and shoot Krishna. So that was the way Krishna chose to leave the world. But actually, Krishna never died. And he was not killed or anything. He can never die. But for the foolish people, they can think like that. So people, they don't really know what is who Krishna is. They're certainly not going to learn it from the books you find in the library, unless they read Prabhupada's books in the library. The general books you see are very distorted. They're going to get only from the book distributors and the devotees, through their contact and their preaching, to understand what is our basic concept of Krishna consciousness. I didn't read the whole article, just the one article section was not asked. But then they're saying how they believe in one God, and they have very much like a Christian, they're into devotion and service and everything. But don't think that it's compatible with Christianity. Because then they get some speculation. So, this is an illusion of Kali to keep everyone in ignorance. They don't actually see the reality for what it is. What is inconceivable? If we say God is omnipotent, he can do anything, then if he wants to come into the material world, what is to stop him? How he comes in the material world, how he is not affected by it, how he is not divided, is not that Krishna comes and he becomes a man. He comes and might appear like a man. But Krishna, he never compromises himself. He is always unlimited. No man could do the things that Krishna could do. Whether lifting the mountain at 7 years of age, or dancing with millions of gopis at the same time in millions of different forms, and marrying 16,000 queens and simultaneously being in each palace with each queen every night. These are not legends or anything. It's actually because Krishna is God, therefore he can do all this. Whether they believe in what we believe or not, at least they should have the courtesy to properly represent what our beliefs are. To the point that Sri Hiranyananda Maharaj is making, that in America, all the Indology teachers The majority of them are all Christian, so they totally misrepresent what is Hinduism, what is Krishna consciousness, what is Indian culture. So he wants to create some institution which can produce devotees who can take up these positions in the major universities. We wish them all good fortune. But definitely the people have a totally distorted idea. So through our preaching and book distribution, through more sophisticated manners of establishing, it's a long-range program in all universities. But gradually we have to give people the true picture. So studying this Bhagavatam, we can understand how Krishna can do all these things, and yet he remains absolute. He remains one and one without a second. So we want to learn these things, we have to learn from the devotees, not from outside people. We don't have any obligation to listen to outside people talk about Krishna. Rather, we shouldn't listen. We should only listen from the Guru Parampara. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Any questions? Vijaya, Devi Dasi. Something like that in the eastern, in India. They don't have that system because they have a system of learning from the Guru. It's not like you go to some college and get a Doctor of Divinity degree and then you study as an apprentice under the Guru, as a disciple, and you learn everything from the Guru. And that was your Doctor of Divinity, your Masters of Divinity, your Bachelor, whatever. And that's still the system that's being practiced by the Orthodox Sampradayas. They do have elementary and second, like Gurukul, where you learn the basics of writing and reading and logic and other necessary groundwork for communication and expression and so on. But that's the fundamental now, as far as the advance. There might be some, I heard him talk about formalizing. In the regular universities, they do have courses on Sanskrit and Indian philosophy, but those Western, are very much Westernized universities, and the information they're giving is not very favorable. That's why most of the educated Indians, they have a shallow appreciation for their own culture. The education hasn't reinforced that. Whatever appreciation they have is, you know, on a much more, maybe what they got from their mother and grandmother and from the whole social environment. But what information they get from the school is contradicting them. So they kind of divided. Okay, this is our culture and we follow this whether it makes sense or not. It's this way. Because we're Indian and it's Indian culture. And that's good enough for some of the older people. Like even from the young people who don't identify so strongly with India. They've been born and brought up in America, and TV and everything. Then they have identity crisis. They need to know why. Why I had to believe. That's why a lot of the Indians are looking to the Hare Krishna movement now, because we are people that have understood, you know, being many of us are Westerners and we've gone through this. If we could be convinced of the philosophy, then even their kids could more easily be convinced. Right? Of course, we're a worldwide movement with Indians and Americans and all kinds of people. But in America and in Europe, they are looking to some extent, not totally, but they're favorable to having us help them in training their children in Vedic and their own belief, because they don't have that type of knowledge. They have that cultural faith and they identify the parents to some extent. But their educational system, there's no kind of comprehensive training in Vedic thought. It's whatever they picked up from the family. And then since it's not an organized religion, like you don't go to catechism and all that. So Lord Chaitanya, his system is quite organized. He wanted that people should study, children should be taught, there should be an organized system of studying the conclusions of the Vedas. Regular classes should be held in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. This is lacking in modern Hindu life. It is an opportunity for us to be of immense service to the Hindu community in this way. Do you have a question, Archie? I looked it up once. Vasudeva, I can't remember the mother. Was the mother another queen or mother was Devaki?
I think it's Swami. Because the name is called
Swami. But that Yogamaya flew off. She's also Subhanava. She appeared again. Pretty sure I read it was the last. Teenage pastor. I can't remember. I remember looking it up. It's mentioned in the Purana. Medium size. They were bigger then. But it's all proportional. compared to our size, he was like 5'10". But Dwarpa Yuga, whatever the size was, the Krishna Yuga. Kshatriyas are very big, I mean, especially the Maharatis. Now that they've discovered Dwarka, you can tell by the size of the doors. Yeah, how high the doors
are.
They discovered Dwarka under the sea, the sunken Dwarka of Krishna. They said that the docks for the ships is bigger than New York Harbor, Amsterdam, all these big modern port cities. But the place where the boats was bigger than the modern, most major modern facility. But with so many boats were going and coming, it required such a big area. As he said, the Buddha should really log into their research. It is him and Buddha Kanda to write it. Lost city. Sunken. Mysterious city of the deep. Someday, he'll come up with a good title. Some subterranean life is there also. It's more likely they have flying saucers. Anyway, that's all pretty speculative. Just out of northern South America, in that area, there's part of a lot of UFOs, and there's some big caves, and I see them coming in and out of the caves. Nobody can find the end of the cave. A lot of caves like that in South America. You go in, you never come out. Maybe it's on Iceland, you never come out. Program tonight, another class meeting. What's the program you're going to figure it out? Something tonight. Stay tuned. Thank you.